The Instructional Leadership Show. This is episode 49 of the Instructional Leadership Show, using shared framework language to discuss evidence of teacher practice. Welcome, welcome. I am your host, Justin Bader, and I'm honored to be with you today to have an opportunity to discuss how we can discuss teacher practice using the shared language, the shared expectations of your instructional framework. I think this is typically a timely topic for March, and every month on the Instructional Leadership Show, we work through a theme. This month's theme, according to our roadmap, is get into feedback conversations. Every week we have a live Instructional Leadership Show that we record for our members. You can watch anytime in our member dashboard. And throughout the month of March, we're talking about different aspects of feedback conversations. Now, as always, our mission at the Principal Center and our focus on the Instructional Leadership Show is helping you confidently get into classrooms every day, have feedback conversations that change teacher practice, and discover your best opportunities for school improvement. And this week, we are focused squarely on the second of those, having those feedback conversations that change teacher practice. So our essential question for today is, how can we use framework language as a shared vocabulary in those evidence-based feedback conversations? I'm going to guess that you have lots of shared expectations, right? You have a teacher evaluation rubric, you might have school-wide expectations, you know, we have all of these, you know, technically officially shared expectations, but often it's difficult to use them, right? It's not that we don't have them. You have the Danielson framework or T-tests or your state teacher evaluation system or something that your district has adopted. Maybe there was a big Marzano professional development initiative. You know, almost everybody has something, even if it's something that your school developed 15 years ago and you never really did much with it. Almost every school has some established framework language, but using it is the rub, right? Using it is the difficult part, because often there's so much of it that it's difficult to call to mind, right? If you're using the Danielson framework, I mean, that's like by itself, that's like, you know what, a 20-page document just to flip through all the different rubrics and look at all the different pages. And it can be quite cumbersome to learn and use that language in conversation. So what we're going to talk about today, and let us know if you're joining live, leave a comment if you're watching this on social media and let me know that you're tuning in here. What we're going to talk about today is how to bring that framework language to mind at the moment that you need it. Because see, typically what we do is we use that framework language, especially our teacher evaluation criteria, in goal setting conferences in the fall, you know, at the beginning of the year, everyone's setting goals, and we use that language then. And then we use summatively at the end of the year, when we're looking back on all the teacher observations we've done, all of our evidence that we've compiled, we look at our criteria again, and we try to figure out, where is this teacher on our rubric? Where is this teacher's performance according to our rubric and based on the evidence that I have? But if we have only used that evidence at the beginning of the year, and now we're trying again to use it at the end of the year, and we haven't used it in the middle, we're going to struggle for a couple of reasons. Number one, that language is not going to be very familiar to us, right? It just doesn't roll off of our tongues very, very fluidly when we've not been using it throughout the year in each specific conversation. And of course, we don't use it in the conversations. You know, secondly, we don't use it frequently in those conversations because it's cumbersome just to flip through the whole long rubric and figure out, okay, what is relevant here? So we wanna make sure that we can find a way to shift our usage of that shared framework language from just the beginning of the year and the end of the year to every one of those observations and feedback conversations that we are having. And I'm going to share with you some specific strategies for cueing yourself with that language at just the right time. Now, before we get into those, I wanna talk about some sources of that language. Now, of course, you have your teacher evaluation criteria. Generally, we're not messing with those, right? Your district or state has adopted those criteria, or perhaps as an independent school, you have adopted certain teacher evaluation criteria. If those need to improve over the long term, great, we can talk about adopting a new system. And in fact, one of the Navigator districts that I'm working with right now is adopting a new system. They've looked at all the different options that are out there, and certainly there's some good work to be done there. But often that's not the low-hanging fruit. Often there are some much simpler things you can do to find that shared language, starting with using what you have and then looking at the school-wide practices that you've already put in place, the curriculum that you're already using and pulling the practices. You know, maybe the curriculum publisher even offers rubrics for what teacher practice looks like. I'll give you an example from Responsive Classroom in just a moment. And then sometimes you have specific trainings that you've been through that provide you with that shared language for what teacher practice looks like. I like to put those shared expectations on a bit of a continuum, with the lowest level here being simply a checklist. And some of what we're going to look at today from Responsive Classroom is just a checklist. You know, the teacher is either doing this or not. Pretty simple. A lot of independent schools have teacher evaluation rubrics that are really just a checklist. That's better than nothing because it still gives you shared expectations and shared language, but often it's not very specific. When we're talking about a practice that we want to help people use, to help people master, to help people continue to improve and get better at, it's helpful if we have not just a checklist for, you know, are you doing that, but a shared definition that is clear and specific. And the best way to be specific is to have a rubric. So it will be no surprise to you that I am a big fan of the Danielson framework and other leveled rubrics that offer those ultra-specific definitions of what good practice looks like in specific areas. Okay, so again, we'll get into some examples here in just a moment. Now, where do we use that shared language? There are three key moments that I want to encourage you to use as opportunities to pull in that language and make the best use of that language. First, while you are observing, before you even write anything down, I want to encourage you to cue yourself with the relevant language from your shared frameworks so that it can draw your attention to the right things. Second, we want to use that specific language that you've already identified as relevant and you've used it to notice the right things. Then, of course, you want to document those things and make sure that language appears in your notes. And third, you want to use that language in your feedback conversation with the teacher. So let's go into each of those. Key moment number one here, while you are observing, you want to review your framework and identify any relevant language. And of course, this is cumbersome on paper, right? It's super cumbersome to flip through a 20-page rubric and say, oh yeah, what was that about questioning? Or what was that about respect and helping students be respectful to each other and their commenting? I know we've got something in here. Let me flip through all these pages. That gets a little nutty. And I know we've all had to do that to find the appropriate criteria, to find the appropriate dimensions that we should be looking for. But fortunately, technology can come to the rescue a bit. And I'll show you how you can use our repertoire app to cue yourself to pay attention to just the right things. And then after you've cued yourself and found the appropriate domains or criteria, you can actually pull up the specific framework language right within the app so that you know what you're looking for and you're also making yourself aware of things that you might have forgotten to look for. You know, it's very easy to just get lost in the moment and to focus on what's happening and lose sight of maybe what should be happening. So we want to have those criteria in mind. Then immediately, while we're observing, we want to use that language to document what we are observing. And a little bit of foresight here can go a long way. If we want to think, okay, I want this teacher to recognize that they have room for growth. I want them to accurately see where they are on our rubric. And I don't want to have to be the one to say, you're a 2 in questioning strategies, or you're a 2 in respectful interactions with students. Like, I want the evidence to do a lot of the heavy lifting. And the key here is to document that evidence, to write your notes about what's happening using the specific language of that framework. So think about, you know, pulling from that rubric, what phrases need to be in my notes? What do I want to make sure that I word in a way that is consistent with my rubric? And this serves two functions. Number one, it keeps you honest. So if you just think somebody is terrible and you don't like them and they gave you a dirty look the other day, when you look at that rubric, if you see that their practice actually is aligned with what you're seeing in level 3, level 4 of your rubric, it can be a reality check and can keep you honest. But second, it can keep the teacher honest because, you know, everybody is defensive about their own practice, right? Everybody thinks they're doing the best that they can. So everybody just naturally assumes, oh, I'm a level 3 or I'm a level 4 in everything. And the evidence is really what we all have to rely on to keep ourselves honest so that we are not inflating our self-assessments so that we're not inflating the ratings of the people that we like, and we're not deflating the ratings of people that maybe we've had some negative history with. That framework language in the form of a leveled rubric really keeps us honest. And then we're prepared for the feedback conversation. We're ready to talk about the relevant issues. We're ready to talk about them using the same vocabulary, and we'll be on the same page as far as what different levels of performance look like. So once we've done that, we can identify the next step. We can figure out, you know, where are we headed with this evaluation? Are we on the right track? Do we need to see improvement in a certain area? Like, this is literally what gets us on the same page of your teacher evaluation rubric. All right. So where do we get that language? We've talked about this briefly a little bit, but I would say as a starting point, you almost certainly want to begin with your teacher evaluation criteria, simply because they're already there. Probably a lot of work has been put into them, and everyone agrees that they have some authority, right? Your teacher evaluation criteria are not just your opinion. They are criteria that everyone agrees carry some weight. This is how we evaluate teachers. This is how everyone is evaluated based on these shared criteria. So you might use the Danielson framework or something like it. This is a couple of screenshots from Domain 2, Component A, creating an environment of respect and rapport. And what you can do at all three stages here is cue yourself with this language so that rather than just take notes, just script and have everything written down and then look at this after the fact, I want to encourage you. This is the big takeaway from today. So write this one down if you're writing things down, or circle this in your notes if you're taking notes. Rather than look at this language after the fact, after you've already taken your notes, and just use it as an interpretive lens and say, okay, well, how do we stack up here? I want you to start using this language from the very beginning to cue you to look for the right things and to document those things that you're seeing using this specific language. So this is basically your word bank as you're taking notes. So looking at levels 3 and 4, which are proficient and distinguished, for 2A, creating an environment of respect and rapport, and full credit to Charlotte Danielson, this is her framework here, used in more than 30 states, I believe. So I see words like friendly interactions, general caring, respect, developmentally appropriate, polite, respectful. So those are the words that I want to use in my notes. This is the vision that I want to move people toward. And if we're already in that reality, I want to document that using this specific language so that I don't have to write it in just kind of my own words and then translate it to match this. Because in that translation, that's where we have a lot of misunderstandings. That's where we have a lot of disagreements with teachers about their own performance. And it becomes much more difficult to have an evidence-based conversation when the evidence is written in one vocabulary and the criteria are written in another. So again, that's the big takeaway from today. Use this language from the very beginning. That's especially important if what you're seeing is subpar. So I wanted to also include levels 1 and 2 from this same portion of the rubric because you see different words here. You see different terms showing up. So I see mostly negative. I see the word inappropriate, insensitive to students' ages, cultural backgrounds, and developmental levels, sarcasm, put downs, conflict. All right, if we're using those words to describe what we see in a classroom, we're headed in a very different direction, right? And we want to be clear about the nature of what we're seeing. So we want to make sure that those terms appear in our notes if they fit. And again, this keeps us honest as well as keeping the teacher honest in the post-conference. Level 2 here, I see maybe inconsistencies, favoritism, disregard, disrespect, uneven results, neither warmth nor conflict. All right, so you are going to get a sense of what Danielson would think of this lesson based on which of those words jump out at you and which of those terms resonate with what you are seeing. How much easier do you think it would be to write this teacher's final evaluation if all of your observations and all of your walkthroughs and all of your notes and all of your feedback conversations had been loaded with these particular terms? It gets much, much easier, doesn't it? I know you've probably done that to some extent in all of your feedback conversations and all of your observations, and I wanna just encourage you to double down on that, all right? So we've got teacher evaluation criteria, certainly. The second place to gather that shared framework language is from anything else that your school has adopted. So if you have a school-wide system like Avid, maybe you're an Avid school and all of your students are taught to use Slant, where they they sit up, they lean forward and take notes and make eye contact with the teacher. Slant is a really important part of what you do in your school. Then you probably have a rubric for those particular practices, for Slant and for Cornell Notes. If you're an Avid school, there are all these different structures built into that that create those shared expectations. You'll also find those shared expectations often in your curriculum. So for example, if you are a responsive classroom school, one thing that you might find is their rubrics. They have rubrics for morning meetings. So this is from the morning meeting rubric. Number 11 here is reinforcing language. You can Google this, but if you're a responsive classroom school, you probably already have this. And this is something that everybody has, bought into by this point, right? You're a responsive classroom school. You're using their rubrics. You already have this language on hand. So I might look at my rubric and find reinforcing language, number 11 here. Teacher uses reinforcing language rather than general praise to notice and name positive behaviors. All right, so if you've been through the training on responsive classroom, you've worked with a coach, you've worked with your teachers on this, you probably have a general sense that reinforcing and naming positive behaviors are what you're supposed to do. You're not just supposed to tell everybody, good job. You're not just supposed to say, oh, I like so-and-so, or I like what so-and-so is doing. You're supposed to name the specific behaviors. But that particular terminology, that particular phrasing might be a little bit difficult to call to mind. So here is what you can do in repertoire. And again, if you're a member of the Instructional Leadership Association, you have access to this. If we've never set up, if you've never set up an account, just let us know. Send us your teacher roster and we'll get you set up. This is a great time to play with repertoire. You'll find immediate use for it, and it can hold all of your language. So if you have a rubric like the Responsive Classroom rubric, we can import that for you, and then you will find it here. And all you have to do is type a few letters. I think if you type three or more letters, it will start to find matches. So if you think to yourself, okay, the teacher is reinforcing the desired behavior, what does our rubric say about that? So all you do is you type reinforce, and even before you finish the word, repertoire will return those matching results. And I see, oh, here it is. Morning meeting 11. Teacher uses reinforcing language rather than general praise to notice and name positive behaviors. Okay, so I kind of knew what I was looking for. I had that term reinforcement, but now I've got that much more specific language in my mind, and I can use that to cue me as to what I pay attention to and to provide the vocabulary that I need to document that in a way that's going to line up with our rubric. Now, in this case, the rubric itself is not very specific. This is basically just a checklist rubric, but even without those leveled, there's not really a level one, level two, level three, level four in this particular rubric, but even without that, look at how much more specific I can be. I've gone from thinking, okay, I'm seeing something about reinforcement to this whole specific definition that you are seeing right here. Teacher uses reinforcing language rather than general praise to notice and name positive behaviors. Super, super helpful. All right, third, we can, in addition to using our evaluation criteria and adopted curriculum and systems, we can develop our own. And over time, I very much want to encourage you to do this. This is not like a day one project. This is not an overnight project. But over time, as you develop the culture of your school, you figure out what makes your school unique, you figure out what challenges you're facing and how you want to approach them, you will develop your own framework. And we have programs that are specifically designed to help you do that. Heather Bell Williams, one of our top members, an award-winning principal in Canada, realized that she had an opportunity to develop shared expectations for the classroom aides, what they call educational assistants who work one-on-one with high needs students. So if you have a student who has a major disability, maybe they have an IEP that stipulates that they get some support to succeed in the mainstream classroom. Heather's school has a lot of staff who are in that role. I think it's about 50% of her staff who's in that role. And she noticed a great deal of variation from person to person in terms of what we might think of as common sense and we talked about this for quite a while, that, you know, there is an opportunity there to get more specific about what we mean by common sense. You know, you have some people who just intuitively have common sense, to like, you recognize that they have common sense. But what we wanted to do in Heather's case was operationalize that common sense and say, you know, we really need people to develop, you know, to demonstrate flexibility so that they can meet the needs of their students, they can fulfill their charge as EAs, meet the needs of the student that they're assigned to, but also, you know, not just be this rigid. Like, if you ever worked with somebody who's just so rigid, they were like, no, that's not in the IEP, it's very difficult to get through the day without that flexibility. So what Heather started to do was she just started to take notes for herself about what flexibility looked like. You know, when people are doing smart things, when they're demonstrating common sense, what does that look like? So here's what she came up with for what she called domain three, demonstrating flexibility. Consistently flexible, approaches change with positive body language, maintains a positive attitude, positive tone of voice, accepts explanations for why decisions have been made, suggests changes and initiates them that are in the student's best interest and in line with policy, able to exercise judgment to problem solve with peers around new schedules, changes in student assignment, or new approaches and routines. All right, so what she was doing there is she was paying attention to the people who demonstrated common sense and just basically writing down what they were doing. Even if there was no previous formal document describing what they were supposed to do, she just started to write it down. And then she would also write down things that she saw people doing that she did not like, that did not work, that caused a problem. So here's her unsatisfactory description. And this, I don't think this is the final product. This is after a little bit of revision. And she noted, the EA is unsettled about changes. Approaches change with a negative tone of voice, negative body language, negative attitude, may share negativity by discussing feelings with others. I have to tell you, as a principal, we have never worked in the same school, but as a principal who worked with, you know, people who often had to deal with, you know, situations like this and be flexible, seeing people kind of run around and kind of vent to each other, you know, this really resonated with me as, you know, as what we really want to see here. You know, not doing these things that are in the unsatisfactory column. EA refuses new schedule, new student assignment, new approaches, and or new routines, gets stuck on an issue and repeatedly brings it back for discussion. All right, she knew from firsthand experience that that was not what she wanted to see. So she put it into her rubric. And then every time you are in a feedback conversation with someone, whether it's a teacher or if you've developed rubrics for non-teaching staff like EAs, then you have those shared expectations. You have that shared vocabulary to use in that conversation and in your documentation. So developing it yourself is definitely a possibility and one that I want to encourage you to work toward long term, but it's even better if it is a shared endeavor. If you are working on a school-wide practice, I strongly encourage you to allow teams, you know, assign teams to own that work of developing rubrics for describing practice for their particular department, their particular grade level, their particular team. Because of course, when people define the expectations that they're working under for themselves, with some help, with some guidance, with some constraints, the ownership is worlds apart, right? The teacher ownership is so much higher. So one of the programs that we're guiding people through in our instructional vision project, which is starting now, is the program we call the Instructional Framework Development Program, which is designed for teachers to develop their own rubrics for practice. Now, we don't want to end up with least common denominator rubrics where everybody just says, okay, what are the things that you do anyway? Let's write those down and turn this in and we'll be done. There is a little bit of an art to keeping the rigor there and to making sure that this creates a roadmap for growth for everyone, even your best teachers. So highly recommend having your teachers go through the Instructional Framework Development Program. If you're a Navigator school, you'll find that in your dashboard and you can send out the link to teachers. And then we also have some training specifically for leaders on how to set that up, how to get the timing right, how to get the right people to go first. We call that the Instructional Framework Development Institute, and that's what you'll see in your dashboard. Another tool that you have access to as a member is, of course, our Repertoire Feedback app. Now, this is the web-based app that we recommend that you use for classroom walkthroughs, for, you know, for your informal visits, as well as for your formal observations. Because what it's going to do is allow you to type one word or a phrase or even just part of a word, and then you will see as immediate, kind of like auto-suggest or auto-complete if you do a Google search, you know, like if you search for best restaurants in whatever, it'll, you know, it'll auto-fill on Google. Repertoire is designed to work the same way, but instead of searching the internet, it searches your database of criteria, your database of phrases, your database of shared framework language. And again, whatever you already have, we will import for you. If you use the Danielson framework, we can import that. If you use Responsive Classroom, we can import that, and then it'll be right here waiting for you. So that even before you take your first word of notes, even before you write down what's happening, you can have those criteria in mind and see what language is used to describe practice in that area. As long as you can recognize the general domain and type in some word related to that, like feedback, boom, I've got all of my criteria right here around feedback. And if I have 10 or 20 different criteria, I can just scroll through these and find the one that works for me. I might then insert that snippet and just leave it in my notes, that whole criteria, criterion, and then I'll write my notes above that, and then I might delete the criterion when I'm done and just share the notes with the teacher. So cue yourself with technology. Don't make yourself flip through a 20-page document to find just the right phrase, because you're going to lose track of what's going on in the classroom in the meantime. Again, if we can help you get set up with Repertoire, just reach out to our customer service team. Send us your roster. Send us your rubric. You know, whatever you want us to import, we can do that for you and get you up and running ASAP. So over the course of the year, when you do that, when you take all of your notes with that specific framework language, your summative evaluations that you do at the end of the year become much easier for one particular reason, that you have already used leveled framework language throughout the process. So when you're looking back on that language at the end of the year to write your final evaluation, you're not then suddenly out of the blue having to make all these judgments about, is this teacher level one, level two, level three, level four, in all these particular areas. You've already been using that language the whole time, but, and this is crucial, you are not scoring those lessons along the way. Now, this is kind of a fundamental belief of mine, and we may differ on that belief. I know a lot of systems really are designed to ask administrators to score individual lessons. I do not believe in scoring an individual lesson. I believe it's much more powerful to instead use leveled framework language. Pull that vocabulary from specific levels of performance from your rubric so that you're documenting using that leveled language and you're queuing yourself up to score the teacher's performance at the end of the year in a way that's highly evidence-based, that's highly defensible, because you've got loads and loads of evidence that's written specifically using that language. But I don't think the individual lesson is the appropriate unit of analysis to score. If you are in a district that requires you to score individual lessons, what you're going to find is that you get a lot more pushback from teachers. Oh, well, I don't think I'm a level two in that. I think I'm a level three. It's like, well, we can have that discussion at the end of the year, but I don't want to have that discussion after every single feedback conversation, every single walkthrough. I want us to talk about what actually happened and how that lines up with our rubric. I don't want us to be fighting over numerical scores. I want us to be aligning our expectations between what we're seeing in practice and what we're seeing on our rubric. And the best way to do that is to use the vocabulary, not to issue a score in the short term. I believe those scores come in long term. So let me know what you think about that. Let me know how I can help. And if you're interested in articulating your vision for instructional improvement and then implementing that vision over the next 12 to 15 months, I want to encourage you to check out the Instructional Vision Project, which we're getting going now. The deadline to enroll is Thursday, March 19th. If you are a navigator school and you're seeing this after March 19th, just reach out. We can get started anytime. But I wanted to get my list of schools that are participating nailed down quickly, because this is my next book project. I'll be doing research in those schools and working closely with school leadership teams to articulate and implement their vision, including developing the very kinds of rubrics that we've been talking about today. And I'm very excited to get going with that for the 2020-2021 school year. So let me know if you are interested. We've been having lots of conversations with people about that lately. You can learn more at principalcenter.com/vision. And that project is for our Navigator schools. So if you are already an individual Navigator member, you're welcome to participate. And if you're interested in getting a site license to Navigator, either for your individual school or for your whole district, or if you supervise, you know, a certain segment of the schools in your district, we can give you a quote for the schools that you supervise. And we can give you a seat at the Instructional Leadership Directors Roundtable. You can learn more about that at principalcenter.com/roundtable. But the best place to go to learn more about the Vision Project is principalcenter.com/vision. All right, that is it for today. Thank you so much for tuning in. This has been episode 49 of the Instructional Leadership Show, using shared framework language to discuss evidence. I'm Justin Bader, and I'll see you next time. Take care.